Hola and bienvenido to another exciting episode of the Asterix Our Podcast. I'm your capitán, Ethan. With me, as always, is my amigo, Kuji.
Hola.
And Frankie's here, too.
Yeah, I think I'm done. I think I'm done already. I'm gonna call it right here.
Frankie, as you may know from the much maligned Geeks Room podcast,
he's got to get that shot in, huh? Right off the bat.
Yikes!
You're in the umbrella of the Hardman Network, but you're on my turf tonight, baby.
I'm here under protest. I'm here through affirmative action only. That's the only reason that I'm here.
Yeah, I could have told you that. Nothing gets through without my approval.
The man. Jeez.
But here you are.
Here I am.
To keep us nice and diverse. Because today we're talking about Coco, your favorite Mexican Pixar film. Everyone's favorite.
It's the best.
And, it's the best. Best Mexican Pixar film I've ever seen.
For sure.
And, yeah, we're going to try and keep it a little tight here, not too long. This is the first time, I think, that we've recorded a podcast for a film that's still in theaters. Do you want to fact check that, Kuji?
Let me, yep. Yeah, that's accurate, yep.
There you go.
I had to check the records real quick, but got through the files.
So, that being said, I don't know. I wasn't able to take notes in the theater because that would be really creepy for a grown man to be in the back with his notepad out with all the children running around.
Yes.
Doesn't watch the movie. Also, so my memory, yeah.
Also, my consideration was doing that, but I thought better of it.
Yeah, best not to do that. Did you take notes, Frankie?
In my mind.
Oh, look at you.
See, I didn't even think. Remember, what? I wrote a review on this, man. Jeez, you could at least, you know, if you're gonna shit talk my podcast, you could at least plug the article.
And that was you? You wrote that?
Yeah. I'm the only one who writes for the goddamn website. What are you even talking about?
That is correct. We have a lovely website, hardbenttoplease.com, and Frankie wrote a lovely article that,
I believe he's the only person who writes for that.
That is correct. It might as well just be my blog, I think, at this point.
Yeah, it's basically your blog and, yeah, hosting these pods. So it's definitely worth the time. I will definitely read that article because I meant to, but I didn't want to spoil this movie.
I did. Okay.
So we'll start with you then. So coming into the movie, Frankie, what were you expecting?
Well, this was on my list of the 15 movies that you should have seen that I do every year for our website. It's been mentioned
another
a couple
article
times at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was on there, and I think before even the release date got nailed down or even there wasn't a bunch of information out about it, I just kind of, you know, you're not going to not put a Pixar movie on a list of movies you should see in a year, unless
that's
it's
right.
The Good Dinosaur. Boom. I went there.
Yeah. I hope Cars 3 was also on your list.
It was not. It was definitely was
what
not.
What the hell?
But yeah, I was excited about it because, you know, it was new territory. I thought that it would be interesting to see what studio that has mostly done things about not people would be interesting to see how they handled a story that was very human specific. You know, I think what they got really Brave and
Brave. Yeah, sure.
Is there any other, The Incredibles?
As far as human, superhuman.
Yeah.
That doesn't quite count.
But I mean, you know,
and also
that lady in Brave turns into a bear and there's like the little kids turn into bears. So that's pretty superhuman, metahuman at the very least.
Yeah, I guess in terms of culturally specific human-based movies, it's probably just this and Brave, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe Inside Out is like the take of take on white people.
Yeah, the only cultural things that white folks have is, yes, exactly, mental issues.
Yes, we all have Lewis Black in our brain.
But yeah, I was excited about it. You know, having a Latin background too doesn't hurt for you to get excited about a movie. And I also wanted to see how it compared to the Book of Life that came out a couple years ago, the Guillermo del Toro joint.
Yeah, I didn't see that one. I also wanted to see that though. Is that good?
Yeah, it's good. I think when we get into like the nuts and bolts of this movie, which I'm assuming will happen on this podcast, because I think that's what these are usually about.
That's all we do. Yeah, we're just a couple of nuts getting to the bolts.
The comparison and contrasting kind of approaches to Mexican culture in this movie versus that one, I think, kind of shines a light on why this movie was successful in my eyes.
Kuji, what about you? Were you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I know this is like the most granola-y white liberal thing to say, but
that's you though.
I really appreciate a movie that's about that focuses on non-white people, because just reading like people's responses of like kids that can watch a movie and like relate to the character in a way that you can't really with like, I don't know, every other movie that's just white people. So I feel very happy for little Mexican children.
Yeah.
Just the graphic design and like everything was amazing from the onset, so I was happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what the story was actually going to be like. I was excited to see it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm kind of in that same space. It's always exciting to see a non-white focused movie. If nothing else, just for the newness of it, because you just don't get a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as a white person, it's like, oh, what's this about? I'll check out this thing. And another culture?
Dia de los Muertos has, like, the coolest imagery because it's just, like, skeletons, and that's, like, so emo and great, and I love it.
It's metal as hell.
It's like stumbling into a hot topic in the early 2000s.
Yes.
Yeah, and being that we do live in America, you're obviously Mexican. Mexico's our neighbor to the south, and I've always felt a connection to their country and their culture to a certain degree. Also living in Florida, the huge Hispanic population there.
Woo!
Yeah.
You get a little taste. And now I live in Texas, which is equal, if not more, influenced by Hispanic culture.
Used to be Mexico.
Yeah, we ripped it right from their hands. And they're not getting it back.
Yeah, well...
So, yeah, I'm with you guys. I was really excited to see it. Basically, yeah, just from the animation, the bright colors of it all, it's very attractive. And then I had no idea of the plot, but I was on board already.
Yeah.
So let's get into some of the deets we got here. The credited director is Lee Unkirk, whose only other solo directing is from Toy Story 3, which, Frankie, you agree is better than Toy Story 2, right?
I do.
Okay, good. You can stay on the pod then.
But it is also, I think... did that come out before or after Up?
That was before... after... Could you help me out? We should definitely know this. Why do you ask?
Well, because I know that whichever one of those is basically every subsequent Toy Story movie, or Toy Story movie, every subsequent Pixar movie that's come out since then, and basically any kind of Disney animation outside of Frozen, has turned me into a blubbering mess, so much so that I think I saw someone tweet something about this, but they need to build in like a couple of minutes at the end of each movie for adults to kind of dry their eyes so that the children that are in the thing are not like, hey, why is that man crying? That doesn't make any sense. This was a funny movie. It's like, kid, you don't understand what's going on in these movies. That's why I'm crying. You don't understand the world yet. So yeah, basically since Toy Story or Up or whichever one, everything since then has just been crying amongst a bunch of children fest. That's basically all it is.
Well, Toy Story 3 takes to another level, I feel like. It's like the worst of it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that one has our nostalgia by the balls just because of the age we were when Toy Story came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it has them face just looking at the eyes of death and the eternal void. It's like the darkest part of it. Gets me every time.
Not unlike Coco, though. I mean, this deals directly with death.
True.
Yeah.
The grandma stuff.
The entire movie's about it.
The grandma stuff is what got me. It's something that I'm going through on a personal level, and I was not expecting there to be such a heavy focus on grandma stuff. So it was like a ninja came in and just gave me a couple stabs, and I was like, oh, wasn't ready. Thanks, Coco. I thought it was going to be about music and skeletons.
The ninja cutting onions next to you?
Yep.
It got me, too, and then, like, once it started, everything, even little things like, oh, look, he saw somebody in his family, started making me, like, tear up, and I'm like, I don't understand. Like, I was just in that mindset already, so, like, even things that weren't really sad made mm-hmm. me want to cry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there. I had read it was emotional, so I was somewhat prepared for that, but you just get lost in the movie, and then mm-hmm. you don't know what's happening, and then at the end, yeah, you're bawling.
Yeah.
But there was a child next to me who was also crying, so I felt better.
Glad
so
you take,
we bonded.
Glad you take pleasure in children crying.
For real strong, beautiful emotion, yeah, I'll take it. So that does beg the question, though, I guess. This is the first time we watched the movie in a theater. Is it a different experience overall watching it, or is it mainly just the fact that you're conscious of children running around?
Are you asking me in particular?
Oh, yeah, I forgot there's two people on the spot. Just throw those questions out, Coogee captures them. Yeah, Frankie, you can go out first, I guess.
Well, I don't really think so much that... So, I think Inside Out was one of the ones where I was, like, consciously aware of kids looking at me, because I usually, you know, I try and see most of the movies that I see, like, either the Thursday before it comes out of Friday, or, like, a Sunday matinee type thing. And I caught, I think, Inside Out opening weekend Sunday matinee, and I sat in a place where I thought that there would be less likely to be a bunch of people in general, and I ended up at the end of a row of, like, 12 children with, like, two moms spaced equidistant between them all, and I was right by a mom and a kid, and I think it was when the little girl, like, eventually, like, you know, she kind of runs away, and then she ends up coming back, and, like, they have, like, that family embrace, you know, and there's lots of unspoken stuff going on between the three of them, and it's just complete torrential downpour of tears. And then, you know, I'm trying to do the thing where you look up so that the tears stay in your eyes, so they don't fall out of your eyes. And I hear this little girl go, "Mommy, why is that man crying?" And I was like, oh, fuck, this is so embarrassing. And I was like, I wasn't embarrassed because having emotions or anything. I was just embarrassed that it was so evident that a small child who was probably just like, ooh, this is a lot of that weird elephant guy was super cute, and everyone's fun on the screen, and there's lots of bright colors. Why is this man crying next to me? It's like, I feel like you know, I'm taking her out of her experience by being a blubbering mess. But yeah, it wouldn't matter. I think I watched Moana on Netflix the other day as, like, background. Mm-hmm. Just, like, you know, I was, like, doing chores or something like that. And again, grandma stuff in that movie as well. And I caught it for just a second, and it tore me up. So it doesn't matter. I could be watching it on a plane, and I would probably still break down. So
okay. Lady, little girl was like, "Mommy, I'm scared."
This guy, this weird creep, is crying. He's like, his tears are in his beard. This is strange. I don't like any of this.
And he's looking directly at me the whole time. any other thoughts on that, Coogee? When was the last time? When was the last time you saw a Pixar movie in theaters?
Probably Toy Story 3.
Yeah, I think that might be the same for me too.
Wow.
And after Up, by the way.
I did try not to cry because I was seeing it with my mom and I was embarrassed. but also she was crying, and I feel like if I cried that would make her cry more, so I was also doing it for her a little bit. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was bad. And this one, I tried not to cry because I was seeing it with our friend Chelsea, and I didn't want to. I didn't want to embarrass myself. Also, I mean, I should probably just be in tune with my emotional side more. But you know,
one thing about watching the movie in the theaters, as opposed to at your home device, is you have the pleasure typically of catching the short that's tied with the Pixar movie. But that's the fun rub about this movie.
The elephant decided in the room.
Yeah. The Olafant.
Oh, that was a stretch. Oh, man. So,
yeah, talk about a stretch. They put a 21-minute goddamn short movie for Frozen in front of Coco. And that's some bullshit.
Yes.
Because it's not even a Pixar freaking movie. I was pissed.
It garnered so much criticism that it was cut before I saw the movie, so I didn't have to suffer.
You were a very lucky man. Frankie and I, we went through the ringer for this one.
Yep. It was what did you think about it, like, just in general, Ethan?
Like, it's really hard. To critique it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's hard to remove it from the extreme annoyance of having to be forced to watch it because I knew that was going to play before it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were like, okay, just show up like 30 minutes after and it's fine. Mm-hmm. But the theaters that I go to, they don't let you get into the movie 30 minutes after it starts. So I was pretty much forced to watch it. Mm-hmm. Part of me kind of wanted to see what all the hubbub was about because, like you said, Kuji, there was a big backlash to showing this. As far as the short itself, it was still garbage. I've never seen Frozen. Maybe that would help, but
it would definitely. Hated
most every second of it.
Yeah. So you'd probably hate Frozen too. I would think then.
Well, Frozen. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Oh. And Frankie, you've seen Frozen as well?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I guess I'm the asshole.
Well, so...
it'll be the first time.
I saw it... I saw it on Thanksgiving. I saw Coco on Thanksgiving. So, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's opening day or the day after or 2 days after or whatever. But I was only aware that the short was in front of the movie. It hadn't really reached fever pitch for anger quite yet. So I just knew it was there. I had no idea how long it was going to be.
That's even worse.
Yeah, well, it really was because it was... I was like... At first, I thought, oh, this is going to be something, and then there's going to be a Pixar short, so I don't know how that's going to work. And it's just... The minutes just kept going on and on and on. And I was like, what? Mm-hmm. I don't know how long this is because it's the type of thing where you expect it to be a short, and it kind of disallows you from being able to view it on its own because you're just looking at the clock the entire time. You're like, when is this going to be over? So you can't even attempt to enjoy it as its own independent little thing because you're like, damn, this thing is literally still going. Like, it won't stop. Why won't this end?
Yeah, it was a real poor calculation.
Yeah.
I mean, what...
I'm a little bummed I didn't get to see it, to be honest, now, because I want to, like, it's like a train wreck, man. I want to watch it, but I guess 30 minutes of train wreck is kind of a bummer.
Yeah, it's too much. Definitely, mm-hmm. I could see it as being like, there's even spots in it where it felt like commercial breaks. So, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was a made-for-TV movie.
Which is what it should have just been, I think.
Right.
So,
that's kind of a bummer. Because that makes sense, being like 21 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, and it had the same like quality of a made for TV movie that's ripped off of a feature is just,
yeah,
it's like, oh, let's look at this other stupid character. Not as bad as a Cars thinking that we gave a shit about Mater, but they thought that we cared about Olaf the snowman.
Yeah, but he's voiced by Josh Gad, so I give him some leeway.
Well, and I felt like the little kids that were in my theater really dug it. You know, there was like some legit Frozen fans in the crowd. So it's definitely geared towards them and the air quotes holiday season. But, you know, I didn't need it. You know, it could have been like a YouTube release or, you know, like a Disney Channel release or something. Or, you know, maybe they repackaged Frozen for the, you know, the Christmas season and put it out with the, you know, bonus thing attached, which I wouldn't put it past Disney to do that anyway. So maybe handle it that way instead of putting it in front of a movie. But hey, I guess it already happened, so there's nothing we can do about it now.
Yeah, it's already gone. Yeah, I wondered really what the idea was behind it. Some people thought that maybe they being Pixar, or I guess Disney is probably the one that made the call here, didn't think that Coco would have the draw, mm-hmm. being a Mexican focused story in white ass America. I don't know.
And boy, either were way. They wrong.
Either way, I mean, it's not only annoying just because of the length and the fact that it was terrible, but also, like you mentioned, we don't get the pleasure of having an average, a normal Pixar short, which mm-hmm. are always excellent.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So.
Was the last one The Little Bird on the Beach? Is that the last Pixar short?
I think so. That one was adorable.
And I mean, those have just gotten, you know, exponentially better. Like each one mm-hmm. has gotten so much better than the prior one. So I was pretty stoked to see maybe if this one was like, you know, culturally progressive as well. Like maybe they took that step to do something else. And then, you know, as the minutes tick by watching Olaf talk about Christmas, I was just like, I guess we're not getting a short, so whatever.
It literally could not be whiter, too, because it's like Norway
fucking, in the show.
I always like seeing each of the shorts like get progressively better, and specifically progressively better in like the rendering of everything is like insane. Every time they like up it more and more, and like
mm-hmm.
I was kind of curious to see how far they could push it. Like,
yeah,
I know I'm jumping ahead, but that the grandma wrinkles, like. They must have spent days on her face.
Yeah. Well, even just the fucking shirt on Mr. Incredible from the little teaser for Incredibles 2. Like, you can actually see fucking, like, lint and fuzz on his shirt. It's like, holy shit. Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's going to be, like, photorealistic soon. Like, it's absurd.
Dang. Uncanny Valley. Pixar movies. Ugh. Whoa. Getting chills.
Yeah, as long as they keep those like odd body shapes, so that
thick thighs save lives, homie.
Yeah, there you go. So the only other thing I wanted to mention here about Disney fucking up, I don't know if you read that they tried to trademark the name Dia de los Muertos.
Oh yeah, that was a
because the big matzo ball hanging out there.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
I guess that was the original name of the movie. I'm not sure. But, yeah, thankfully, it took a week, and then they pulled that back.
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't have gotten it, right? Because that's like a holiday. You can't... Can you trademark Thanksgiving?
I don't know. I don't know. I guess there's the name.
Like Coca-Cola would have trademarked, like, Christmas by now.
Yeah, every fucking thing. Yeah.
You know what? I would not be surprised if we found out that actually is the case. It just never got released.
Oh,
that make perfect sense. So yeah, let's get into the movie itself. So most of that was spoiler free, I believe. I think going forward, we're gonna probably get into some spoilers here.
Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert! Here's the cast. That's not much of a spoiler. all Latino cast, which
Yay, yay.
Adds to the loveliness of it. Anthony Gonzalez is the main kid, Miguel.
Fucking killed it. That kid's so good.
Killed it. Yeah. Absolutely killed it. He's got a beautiful singing voice. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen him singing another stuff. They really nailed that. And he just, I think I heard he just auditioned, right?
I think so.
I think I read that somewhere.
Yep.
And there's like, that kid's got it. And then the second lead, I guess, is Gael García Bernal.
Mm-hmm.
You know from Y Tu Mamá También if you're a freaky deaky guy. Or Mozart in the Jungle if you're a square. The rest of the cast, I don't really know who they are, but...
you know who Benjamin Bratt is.
Benjamin Bratt, yeah.
How do I know Benjamin Bratt? Because I was looking him up, but I didn't recognize him.
I think the thing that you would have seen him in most recently was a cameo in Doctor Strange.
No, what I know him from, as I'm looking at the picture now, is from Miss Congeniality.
Yes.
Yeah.
I get it now.
You want to date me.
He was in Demolition Man also. Also yeah. With Sandra Bullock.
Oh, there you go. Power couple.
But I feel like he was also... Was he in Catwoman?
Ooh.
I don't see the credit. He had it wiped from his Wikipedia.
I mean, I would do that.
Oh, boy. Catwoman, Jesus Christ.
And then, okay, here, oh, this is a little early, but Ratzenberger Report, what, ooh. Where was he? Where was he? I didn't even see him.
I didn't catch him at all.
He's Did credited catch... as, like, bad tooth skeleton, which is all of them.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know if you've listened to any recent podcasts, Frankie, but we're trying to really highlight the usage of John Ratzenberger.
Or the lack thereof.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we started this Ratzenberger Report too late because now he's like barely in any of the movies. I did not catch him at all.
It's okay. I've been watching Cheers to make up for it, so it's fine.
When you go back through and collect all of your Asterixar and you do a redux, you can put it back in.
Yeah, we'll do a premium version. This yeah. Focus hey, heavy on John Ratzenberger.
Brought to you by KFC.
Yeah, once you get those sponsorships rolling in.
Sponsors down.
The only other name you recognize, that I recognize at least, Edward James Olmos.
Yep.
He was Chicharron.
And then...
And we'll get to him.
Cheech Marin made a... I was waiting for him because... I feel like you can't make a movie about Mexico without just having him in it somehow.
Correct.
But he was super toned down, though, which I appreciate. Cause
oh, yes.
I feel like he got to just use his normal voice instead of them being like, no, 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 sound like Cheech, come on.
Hey, man, how you doing, man? None of that stuff. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they already got him to do that for Cars, so.
And fucking yeah. Book of Life.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah, he just... He's and in his contract. Yeah, anytime there's a lowrider or a chihuahua that needs a voice, call up Cheech Marin. And Gabriel Iglesias, too, is in there. Hey, you know that name. So, what's the movie about? We've been talking about 30 minutes already. Like we mentioned, I didn't know anything. I kind of avoided, I guess, trailers, whatever, so I was in there fresh. But the story starts with an introduction that explains that the family that Miguel is a part of, the Riveras, have banned music for life because his great-great-grandpa left the family to pursue a career in music. And kind of like you brought up earlier, Frankie, with since Up, they're kind of doing maybe a little bit more adult themes. But this seemed like a very adult theme to start a movie.
Mm-hmm.
This guy leaving his pregnant wife. Oh, no, she had a kid.
No, the kid had already... Yeah, at the very least, she didn't leave her, with child. Just with a child.
Yeah, already birthed child.
Yeah.
And the movie tells us this man is Ernesto de la Cruz, who went on to become the greatest musician in Mexico or whatever's history.
They don't say that right off the bat, though, right? Because
yeah, they do. They show like the city square that's dedicated to him. It's not in this introduction, but it's within the first like 10 minutes.
Yeah, so. I think when they're doing the little intro, it's a man has left this family, mm-hmm. and that's what split it. And then I think we get the idea that the person who is an inspiration for our main character falling in love with music, or at least wanting to pursue it, is, you know, the greatest musician of all time. And then eventually he kind of puts two and two together and was like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you guys, but I was a little confused right off the bat, which is not a good sign, being this is a child's movie. Because they introduce this Ernesto de la Cruz. He's from the same city as Miguel, greatest musician ever. And at that point, I thought that they were telling us that Ernesto de la Cruz was related to Miguel. And I thought he knew that.
No, I didn't get that at all.
Nope.
Well, you shouldn't have, because that's not the case.
Exactly, yeah.
But I was in a weird headspace.
I mean, they did. It was bothering me that they went so heavy on, like, music is banned forever because this one thing happened. Mm-hmm. Then I realized it's a kid's movie, so they have to make, like, really broad strokes about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's forgiven. But they're very passionate about not having music.
Yeah, and this is now Miguel's grandmother is keeping that tradition alive and, mm-hmm. like, physically beating Miguel whenever he picks up a guitar. which is lovely.
And then they also have the great-grandma who...
The titular Coco.
Yeah, Coco.
Hey, man, you gotta bury the lead, remember? We don't know that's her name for a while. Like they keep it.
You don't?
Yeah, it's not like right off the bat.
I think they tell you her name's Coco.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Huh.
I'm pretty sure. But, I mean, it doesn't register with you yet, the significance of that. Even
maybe
though
that's what it is, yeah.
So, I think it does a lot of stuff to kind of bury the lead on you and set you up for later reveals,
mm-hmm.
That I did not pick up on. So, I'm just not the sleuth I thought I was.
Got to turn in your script doctor credentials.
Yeah. I don't know if he's going to make an appearance. I don't think so.
I mean, right off the bat, I think it's implied pretty heavily that since music is banned, obviously the main character is going to be obsessed with music,
mm-hmm.
and want to rebel.
Yeah.
Like, immediately.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a classic little Kickstarter to the plot.
Oh yeah, sets up that initial conflict that's easy to kind of, you know, you get a feel for the main character's kind of drive right off the bat. And you know, definitely jump starts the whole journey.
Yeah, so that's Miguel. He doesn't want to stay in the family business of making shoes.
Making fucking shoes.
Although they're excellent at making shoes, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
They're famous for it.
They are, and then they also make... I feel bad for cobblers now, because, like, they made it seem like it was such an awful thing to do. Like, it's not that bad. Like, it's not, like, the most boring thing ever. You can have some, like, pretty good artistic liberties with making shoes.
Oh, it seemed like everyone in the family really liked making shoes.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah. Miguel's just like, shoes fucking suck. And it's like, oh, hey, just... They're not that bad. Come on now. But, you know, when your only dream in life is to play music, you're just like, they could have been like fucking artists of some other kind, but if it was just not music, they'd be like, nope, fucking painting is for squares.
Yeah, I guess they picked a good business for them. Because it's like shoes, yeah, it's boring. It was not that boring. So.
Yeah.
It was
there were no offended cobblers out there. They never get any love.
Well, they're just now recovering from that terrible Adam Sandler movie, so this is just like a second gut punch.
What movie is that? He made a cobbler.
The
movie?
Cobbler is literally just the cobbler. It's like a Netflix, like a direct Netflix movie.
Oh wow! How did I miss that?
Fucking Adam Sandler had like a 6 movie, some million dollar deal with Netflix, and I'm like, why? Why would they do that?
Because Netflix executives were just like high on coke one night, watching Billy Madison. They're like, this guy needs $1 billion.
Lowest common denominator.
I think Netflix just got like, because they made, I feel like there's like, if we just flood a ton of content, then people will start watching us more or something. Yep. Like, they must have some weird plan like that because they're making so much content. It's ridiculous.
Hey, it's working.
Some of it.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. I mean, they're probably making money. But Miguel, his desire is not to make money, but to make music. And like we're saying, he's getting shut down by his family. But lo and behold, Dia de los Muertos is coming up, and they're having a big old talent show. So as his idol, Ernesto de la Cruz, would say, shoot your shot or whatever he says.
Something to that effect. Seize the moment.
Grab the moment.
Something along those lines.
It's
very original.
It's very close to Carpe Diem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They tweaked it just a little bit.
Basically. Yeah, so that's kind of the motto that Miguel is holding on to. So he wants to pursue his goal. And he doesn't have time for shoes, doesn't have time for the ofrenda, which we learn in this movie is the altar of which you place pictures of dead relatives.
Yep.
Yeah. Am I getting that right? Are you a...
Am I the cultural watchdog on this?
Yes.
Yeah, that's
yes.
what you said.
Yes. You put the you put the pictures of your departed loved ones, and that's what. Well, we'll get to that part. But yeah. That's what the ofrenda is.
But again, the movie it's putting a lot of seeds in there for how the movie's gonna grow. And it's kind of stuff you don't really notice or care about until later on in the movie.
Well, I feel like that was just explaining the holiday that they're focused on. I feel like they had to do that a little bit. As someone who knew very rudimentary concepts about the holiday.
It's trademarked. You can't say it.
Yeah, it's true. I don't want... I'll call it D-Day. And I didn't know that much about it. So, you know, it was good that they threw a little background in there. I feel like they probably glossed over some of it, I'm sure. But you can't include like everything in there. But
yeah.
I'm glad they explained it like a little bit at least. And speaking of ofrendas, I was very happy with how they like seamlessly tied in just like Spanish words, just like back and forth. Like I feel like some movies try to do that and it's really annoying because they like do that thing where they pronounce it really like loudly. So you can hear that they're saying it. But I feel like they like just threw it in there like very, it's very casually, and I liked it. And it was done very well. I was impressed.
Well, yeah, it could go badly. Like, who's that chef? Giada? He always is like, and then we put some of the mozzarella on the pasta. It's like, calm down, lady.
Yeah. Well, I think that kind of leans into one of the better overall approaches that this movie takes, where you know, a lot of the people that made this movie were either, you know, Latin American or just, you know, straight up Mexican American, and the type of conversations that the people were having in the movie are the type of conversations that they would have with people at home, you know, especially if they've got kids that don't speak Spanish as their first language, but they want to make sure that they're, you know, maintaining the culture. So that whole approach to Spanglish in general was like really well done throughout the film, even so much so as like when you would get straight up words that if you've got no Spanish background at all you wouldn't know, but the way that they're used within the conversation or the inflection with which they're used kind of gives you an idea, I think I know what they mean by that, as opposed to just being like, I know what the literal direct definition of these words are. You kind of just get an idea of what it's supposed to mean based off of, like, the situation. So I think that was one of the better parts of the film mm-hmm. overall. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't like an after school special or something. Yeah. Like, here's the word, and they put it on the screen.
Yeah, no subtitles at all.
That's true. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, it was very great.
When they bring up later the Alebrije, the fantastical creatures.
Yeah, like the demigods, the protectors. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a word I'd never heard. Didn't know that those things had a name other than like colorful creature guys.
That is definitely a Mexican word for sure. That is a straight from Aztecs straight through to Mexicans type of Spanish, because if you were to say that to someone in Spain, they'd be like, "What? What is that word that you're saying?"
Is it like Nahuatl, like that super like
huh?
Doesn't one of our friends' uncles, I feel like he speaks one of those languages.
Like super native. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like original people's language.
Like from like Central America or South America?
They're from Mexico.
Oh, okay, yeah. I can never remember that one is, but there's another one called Quechua, which is what the Peruvian folks speak that's not Spanish. So yeah, like those type of super native, somehow they retained that language type stuff. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, the other great word, it wasn't shown in the movie, but he has his little buddy dog, Dante, and the breed is a Xolotl Cuintle.
Is a chupacabra.
Yeah, spelled XOLO, blah, 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 blah. It's a lot of words. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful looking word, though.
Like Quetzalcoatl, like that sort of looking word?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's, let's do XOLOITZCUINTLI.
Wow.
See, what the TL always gets me. That's like a very, like, hard sound to get.
Shaloi Quintle.
Shalom. Shalom. Shalom.
Yeah, it sounds very Jewish when I do it. I don't know what that's about. So they kind of introduce all that in the beginning very very naturally. Through as he's running through the city, he meets the dog, he sees the alibi he has. And then he, of course, wants to join the talent show just because he's tired of living in the cobbler lifestyle, and he wants to break out. But the only problem is he doesn't have a guitar. So what does he do? First, he begs a... what do you call him?
Mariachi?
Mariachi. How do I forget that word? He begs a mariachi guy, but then Abuelita comes and beats his ass too.
Yeah, crushes that dude.
Oh, man.
Yeah, she wails on him pretty good.
Do you know what they call... the sandal?
No.
It's called the chancla.
Chancla?
Yeah. It's very specifically a sandal that's used to threaten family members. It's it's great. You know, that's the thing. That's the pretty classic. Like, there is a ton of memes. If you go to like Mexican Twitter, the chancla's all over the place.
Oh, it's excellent. Well, there you go. It's not even something they even address in the movie, but mm-hmm. I'm sure that it plays to the Mexican crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Something that they would recognize.
Hey, time out real quick. I just want to note that my upstairs neighbor is blaring Little Drummer Boy for some fucking reason. So if that comes up in the recording, I'm very sorry.
I hope it comes through.
I'll make sure to enhance it. I can hear it through my headphones.
Jesus Christ.
Jeez. It's okay. My upstairs neighbor's running around like crazy, too. I'll edit all that out. I'm an excellent editor. Miguel needs to find a guitar, and he can't get one from the mariachi. So where does he find one? But in the gravesite for Ernesto de la Cruz, who tragically died because he was crushed by a giant bell. So Miguel... Yeah, very hilarious. If I could pick my way to go.
Yeah. Well, it was
Crush Giant Bill.
That whole sequence of them showing his death, with it being kind of like an Elvis style Vegas show, was fantastic. I loved that a whole lot.
Yeah, and yeah, he is basically like a Mexican Elvis character. Very, very sexual.
Very suave.
Very suave, yeah.
This big old guitar. Is there a Mexican Elvis?
There must be.
In real life?
Like a the equivalent? Like a, yeah, like an equivalent, yeah.
That's a great question.
There probably is.
We'll leave that up to the listeners.
yeah.
Send us your Mexican Elvis inductees, and we'll see who works. So it's the night of Dia de los Muertos, which is when this big talent show is happening. Miguel goes, sneaks into the gravesite, steals the guitar, but as he's doing it, he's thinking that Ernesto de la Cruz, or saying that he's his grandpa, he's like, give me permission, or give me, you know, your power, basically, to play this guitar, win the talent show. As he does it, he strums and he gets warped to another realm, unbeknownst to him, though.
Yes.
And he's on the other side.
Yeah, he jumps. He crosses Jordan. whatever that show was. So all the people are there on the grave in the cemetery, and paying homage to their dead relatives. And Miguel goes out and he finds his family, but they can't see him because he is on the other side. And he gets freaked out, and he only gets saved by a skeleton picking him out of a gravesite. What kind of a crazy imagery is that? And so this is kind of when it starts, you know, jumps to another level. And I was aware that this is what happened in the movie. I think they weren't really hiding the fact that he was going to go cross over. Yeah. That was kind of the main draw.
Yeah.
And also in the beginning, after the Frozen short, they show like kind of a sneak peek of some of the animation for this, like, I don't know what you'd refer to, not the underworld.
It's like a dead city.
Yeah.
Land of the Dead, I think is what they call it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Great movie.
Yeah, Land of the Dead. So he meets up with actually his family. They're all there to meet him and say hi, I guess. The idea is that every night, Dia de los Muertos, the dead relatives come and they kind of visit their living relatives. So they find Miguel and they bring him across this bridge to the city. And I don't know about you guys, but they then show, you know, the full Land of the Dead. And I got a little emotional looking at that.
Oh, yeah.
It was such a beautiful shot.
Super, super cool.
Even though I was fully aware of what it was going to look like. Apparently that shot took, I don't know, however long to make, and it was probably the most difficult shot of the movie.
Definitely.
But yeah, got a little emotion. It was a beautiful shot. And that's kind of where it starts. The movie starts kicking in with the, like, even brighter and more colorful imagery, being that they are now in the Land of the Dead. And it's beautiful. You cried too, Frankie? Fuji, you cried?
Well, cried. It was one of those, like tears of awe, I think would probably be the best way to put it. I just, like, you know, because I'd seen it before, especially in, like, the early testing phases and stuff like that, where it was just, like, hand-painted and everything. But then just it, like, especially them going across the Marigold Bridge, and like seeing the kind of ghostly waterfalls on top of like the Aztec pyramids going up into this kind of almost shanty like village, like that was like fluorescent and beautifully colored and everything, and you just see all the alebrijes like flying around, and you know, it's just this like technicolor wonderland, and it's just like, holy shit, this is amazing. Because it was like they were able to inject so much, like, depth and scope into just one single shot. Like, it looked gigantic, you know? And it's also, I think, one of the things that's good about seeing a movie like that in a theater as opposed to just, like, on a TV screen. It was really awesome.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And did either of you guys see it in 3D?
No, I just saw it regular.
Yeah, me too. Still, Beautiful shot. Yeah. And yeah, it was one of those tear ups where I wasn't really like sure why I was tearing up. Or yeah. Like, yeah, it wasn't a sadness. It was just an overwhelming. But yeah, really memorable for sure. Like if nothing else, just that one moment is gonna stick with you after watching this in the theaters. So from here, this is kind of where we're kicking the plot as well into high gear, because Miguel meets his family. They're all visiting, of course, across the Marigold Bridge, and he needs to get back. So they bring the family. Miguel needs to get back. So the family brings him to meet his grandma, who is stuck on the other side of the bridge. And then this is kind of also when we learn a lot of the rules of this Land of the Dead.
I love the rules.
Yeah.
I was going to, they did a really good job, I think, with, as you were saying before, laying a lot of groundwork in the intro that's not going to play up. And then also, yeah, setting the ground rules for how this transfer works between these two lands.
Mm-hmm.
And they also set the timeline, because we learn that Miguel has to get back to the Land of the Living before sunrise, or he'll stay in the Land of the Dead.
Yep.
Forever.
As a skeleton. And you can even, they even do kind of the Back to the Future where his hand starts becoming more skeleton. You can see right through his skin and bone.
Although he seems not that upset by it at any point.
I think it's kind of
rolls
like
with the punches.
Yeah, it's one of those like childhood innocence type things where it's like, yeah, it's all gonna work out. And she's like, dude, you're technically dying right now, like actively dying. Have I talked to you guys about my first trailer only theory?
No, please enlighten us.
So the idea is that besides like a teaser trailer, that I only ever watch the first trailer for any movie, because as it goes on, you know, you get more and more information, but I don't have the ability to turn my brain off and start like trying to decipher the plot before I even get into a movie. And this unfortunately happened with this one, because I saw, I think, the part where he's playing in like the talent show, but in the Land of the Dead. And I noticed that his fingers were skeleton-y. It wasn't like painted. It was like, you know, they're like translucent. And I was like, oh, so that must just be like him turning into a skeleton from being in the Land of the Dead. So I unfortunately had already guessed that part of the plot line, not the rules, but just like that he was turning into a skeleton. And I was like, shit, that's why I don't like fucking trailers, because it just, you know, that just happens.
Yeah. Avoid all trailers. I say, if you can. I mean,
yeah,
it's pretty hard to these days. I still haven't seen any Star Wars trailers, so I'm going strong on that.
Oh, can't wait. But yeah, that's another podcast.
Yeah, that's... Save it for yours. Keep it in your pants. Kuji, did you have any plot ideas in your mind coming in?
No, because I also do that where I try not to watch any trailers at all, if at all possible. Mm-hmm. Because... And I'm really pissed because I saw some movie that... I saw Thor, and they had the Star Wars trailer, which I hadn't seen until that point because I actively tried not to see it, and mm-hmm. they played it, and I was really sad because I thought about closing my eyes in the theater, but then I looked like a total weirdo, so I didn't do that.
I do that shit all the time, so don't even worry.
All right.
Yeah, it's a great point. I should just start showing up late, because yeah, you can't avoid it when you're in the theater. You're just gonna have to look
right
at it.
I'm like always late to movies. Like I always get there like 10 minutes late because I'm just a late person. But I saw that with my mom, and she's like insistent that we get there like 30 minutes before. So I had to like hang out with Melissa Menounos too and do all that stuff. And like the pre-previews, which are awful.
Yeah.
Does that lady age, by the way?
Never.
It's crazy. Was she the ring girl for a Celebrity Deathmatch?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
I think she was, and she looks like she's still made out of clay, like perfectly sculpted out of clay. It's crazy.
All I know is she's on Bar Rescue from time to time, and for like no reason.
Bar Rescue, which also stars someone who looks like they're made out of clay.
Yes. Sean Taffer is definitely animatronic.
So back to the movie at hand. The other rule we learn here is that in order for Miguel to go back to the land of the living, he needs a blessing from a family member. So he meets up with his grandma, and she gives him the blessing, but only on the condition that he never plays music, because she is the one who was left with the child.
Started the whole no music thing.
Yeah, so really tough task to get it from her, and all the other family members there are too scared of her to provide it to him. But I did like the scene. She gives him permission, and Miguel reluctantly accepts it, so he goes back to the land of the living. But then he immediately reneges and plays guitar. It's like, of course a kid would do that.
It's too good, yeah.
They'd be like, yeah, sure, Mom, I'll do that, and then thinks he can get away with it. So that also sets the establishment that, okay, this isn't a goof. Like, you actually have to get your full permission.
Mm-hmm.
So Brilliant Miguel says, hey, I can't get it from you. I'll get it from Ernesto de la Cruz, my great-grandpa, fellow music lover, left his wife for music, so why wouldn't he give me permission?
Yeah.
And so that really kicks off the traveling part of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And then they establish the social hierarchy, which was kind of a bummer, because even in the afterlife, like, cool people are praised, and sad poor people are, like, just thrown in the ghetto of the land of the
skeleton
dead.
Ghetto, yep.
Yeah.
Which would be Hector, our buddy here, who runs into Miguel and tells Miguel that he can get him to Ernesto, since he knows him. So, yeah, so they team up, and that kind of kicks it off there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to say, Kuji, that you liked that it establishes the hierarchy of the familiar, the family structure, where
that
everyone is scared of grandma.
Yeah. Well, that's – I think it's interesting that the majority of non-white culture is very matriarchal. And yes, as knowing a lot of Mexican folks, I can attest to that for sure. That's really it's pretty, like, they establish it in life and in death, you know? So I think that was pretty cool.
Yeah, you can't escape. And I'll say, you know, Kuji and I think that applies to Italian families as well.
Definitely, yeah.
It's a universal structure other than what Americans think is the case. The women are in charge. Don't try and deny it.
Yeah.
So now we get the, what does Jared refer to it as? The stinky and blinky?
Oh, it's grumpy and spunky.
Grumpy and spunky go for a walk. So there's this portion of the movie. Hector is kind of a prankster, skeleton, dead guy.
Oh, he's a fucking grifter, man.
He's a grifter.
Oh, yeah.
He's trying to get back to the land of the living, but he can't do it because the other rule that we're establishing is that if there's no picture of you on an ofrenda, you cannot go back. So that's another thing. So that's what Hector needs. He needs someone to put his picture up, and Miguel needs Hector to bring him to Ernesto. So he agrees to bring him as long as Miguel puts his picture up. So it's like, okay, we got all the rules here. We know what we're doing. Let's go off on the journey here. And then we start the hijinks. First we meet Frida Kahlo's skeleton. So that's fun.
That was so good. Like, that was definitely one of those things where, like, you know, you can tell that these are adult jokes that are painted with kid colors so that, you know, there's silliness happening on the screen, but you're just like, they're making fucking meta-ass Frida Kahlo jokes in a Pixar movie?
They really dug Frida Kahlo. They must have really loved her. They make so many references to her.
Mm-hmm.
She's like a major plot point. It's just Frida Kahlo existing.
Super. And it also kind of reinforces an aspect of the if your picture's up rule, because it kind of, and, you know, also goes back to the hierarchy thing in a way too, because these people that are, you know, famous in Mexican culture have their pictures up everywhere all the time, so they don't even really necessarily need family members to continue to remember them because the entire world does. So it's kind of another interesting little plot point.
Yeah. And again, with Frida Kahlo, they don't hold your hand for that reference. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obvious. It's going to be obvious to anyone familiar with Mexican culture, or of course anyone who is Mexican, who Frida Kahlo is.
Yeah.
And then they introduce her, and then they have her show like her art piece that they're going to display for the sunrise party. And yeah, they kind of almost take some meta digs at her, where every part of the art piece is also her. She's like, the dancers, they're me. And then they go drink milk from the cactus, who's also me. And that's a definitely an adult joke. No kid's going to understand that, but still plays very well into done. The whole thing.
For sure.
Yeah, very well done. Very tastefully done.
Yeah.
So this was, I believe, Hector's first thought to get to Ernesto was to go meet up with all the artist buddies he has here. Frida being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But then that doesn't quite work out, and they decide, oh, we have to go again, another talent show.
Yeah.
To the winner gets to meet Ernesto. So okay, there's another step in the path here. But again, Miguel needs a guitar, so we got kind of the repeat of this situation. And so they go to meet Hector's friend Chicharrón. And we learned another rule of the Land of the Dead.
Who lives in the Mexican favelas.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the Edward James Olmos, right? That's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's him, in a minor part. He lives in the area with all the dead people who really have no family to remember them. So they just kind of become their own family. And we learn from Chicharrón that... if no one remembers you, well, once the last person in the living world forgets you, you leave the Land of the Dead to go somewhere no one knows.
Yep.
Which was a pretty, I mean, that's really powerful.
Oh, yeah.
The idea, I mean, kind of the underlying idea of this entire movie is the thoughts of your legacy and your memory being passed down and how... I mean, you don't necessarily have control of it, obviously, after you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that was a pretty heavy topic to tackle there, and they handled it really well because it's Hector's Chicharrón's friend. He goes to meet him. They get the guitar as long as Hector plays him his favorite song before he passes and kind of dies for a second time. And what do they call it? The final death at that point?
Yeah.
Which, I was thinking a lot about, like, why would they have to put that in there? Because it's, like, such a, like, a dark concept. But then, I mean, they have to give stakes to Hector.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little more than just, like, I just want to be remembered. But, like, they have to, like, add a little more heat under there. Make sure people get it.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because, like, with, like, the kind of surface level aspects of Hector... It's kind of like, you know, yeah, he just wants, you know, to kind of be flashy or, you know, for people to remember him or something like that. But then you peel back the layer, especially that whole sequence with him playing him the song and everything, you realize that it might seem like he's just doing it just to do it, but he's really just kind of, you know, doesn't, you know, he's weirdly the most human character because he's worried about, you know, essentially dying, even though he's already died once. You know, he's like, oh, I don't want to die. I don't want to double die or whatever it is.
Super dumb.
Yeah. I really like the Hector character, and that scene really solidified it for me because he's the whole time he's, you know, a prankster, a grifter, and then he sees his friend. He has a very emotional moment with him. And then his friend leaves, and there's just like a real quick shot, and his face is just so... down, and he's so disheartened, but he's not showing that to Miguel.
Yeah.
And then once Miguel's like, okay, we gotta go, he picks back up and puts on the happy face for him.
Yeah,
it's very small, but I thought, yeah, really, really touching part there.
Super powerful. Yeah,
he knows that as a child you can't grasp that concept just yet, probably.
Yeah, that's true. Because, yeah, I think even Miguel even asks him about it. And he just kind of almost brushes it off.
Yeah, which I guess is what, you know, a lot of parents have to do with kids anyway. And it's kind of like, this isn't the type of conversation we should be worried about having just yet.
Yeah, and that's true. That's another theme, I guess. Mm-hmm. The idea of how you discuss death with kids.
Also, this might be Disney's way of, like, scaring kids into, like, paying homage to their ancestors all the time.
That's true.
Like, I feel like the director got, like slighted by somebody or, like...
You fuckers better remember me.
Yeah.
Real quick, do you guys know what chicharrones are?
Is that the, like, pork skin? Fried
yes.
pork skin?
Like pork... It's like yeah. fried pork belly.
Oh, yeah.
Or I guess you'd call them right. pork rinds.
Yeah, I only know that because I went to Mexico, guys. How about
oh.
that?
What? Oh.
And I had fresh chicharrón with guacamole, and it was friggin' amazing.
It's so good. It's so terrible for you, but it's so good.
Oh, yeah. But it's a way better dip than the normal, like, tortilla chip.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a chance, yeah, definitely try that, Kuji.
I think I've only had, like, the prepackaged pork rinds.
Like from Piggly Wiggly's or something?
And they weren't... I wasn't a fan. But I feel like there's not actually any pig in it. I think it's like a Cheeto, but...
Yeah, it's like a corn puff with, like, pork yeah. flavoring.
Yeah. It's pig-esque.
If you get, like, a pork butt that has, like, the skin and the bone still in it, and you just, like, you know, cook that in the oven yeah. or whatever, if you leave that fat on... until you're done cooking it, and you just slice it off and then fry that, that's essentially what it is. And it's like some of the... Oh, yeah. Literally, it's like signing your own death warrant, but it's worth it. It's so worth it.
So indulgent mm-hmm. to eat the butt.
Oh, I want it. I want it right now.
And then put a little lime on it, my friends. That's the way to do it. You just got to put a little bit of lime on there, and it's so good.
That's why people come to this podcast, for the cooking tips.
There's got to be a place in town, well, especially near you, Ethan, that sells that.
There's actually a restaurant right down the street called Chicharrón.
Oh, there you go.
It's like, I don't know how if they'd serve it. I hope they would.
And maybe it's like a pink berry, but you just like choose your own chicharrones.
Oh.
Choose your own poke butt.
Yeah.
And they slice it up for you.
Oh, so good.
So Chicharrón the character, he passes, but we get the guitar, so win.
Yay.
Yeah.
And then we get Miguel performing in the talent show, and we get some more fun scenes with him and Hector, who is able to kind of inspire Miguel, because even though Miguel has these dreams of being a musician, he's nervous as hell. Mm-hmm. He's never actually performed. So he needs a pep talk. And then we have a real fun scene of him playing the... what was that song called?
Poco Loco.
Poco Loco.
It's
my new favorite song.
Best song in the movie by far.
Yeah.
So good.
And they give you the full song,
mm-hmm.
which is great. And then we should say music, the whole music done by Pixar alum Michael Giacchino. Who was on Inside Out, Incredibles, Ratatouille, Up.
And I think, I might be wrong, so you might have to fact check me on this one, but I think the people that wrote these songs were the people that wrote the Frozen songs.
Oh, sure. I can't verify that or not.
I think if I remember correctly, because they're Latin, if I remember correctly. It's like I think it's a couple.
Franco and Molina is what I'm seeing here.
Okay. And so they wrote the songs for Coco?
They're credited for Poco Loco. Everyone knows Juanito, which is the song Hector plays for Chicharrón.
Mm-hmm.
A few others as well.
Yeah.
How about Remember Me?
Oh, yeah, Remember Me. That one is Anderson Lopez and Lopez.
Ooh,
oh, I'm like sorry, both. Anderson Lopez.
I was going to say the law firm, Anderson Lopez and Lopez.
It's Kristen. That's funny. Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez. That makes a lot more sense.
So good. Do you guys? Cuju, you live in Florida, right?
Yeah.
So you remember the Morgan, Colin, and Gilbert commercials
for the people?
Yeah. So when you watch it on the Spanish channel, for the people in Spanish is por la gente, and so anytime I hear any kind of Latin based names that are attorneys, I always say that, and people are like, "What the fuck are you? What are you saying?" And it's like, sorry, it's like a weird Pavlovian response.
I say for the people a lot too. It's such a good phrase.
It's good.
It's a good bookend to like any.
It obviously sticks, right?
Declaration.
That's so good. I said it obviously sticks because we're both talking about it.
Yeah. They still got those commercials, by the way. I watch it like all the time.
It's just Morgan and Morgan now, right? This is getting so clearly Floridian. Like,
this is very niche.
It's John Morgan, his son John. He has another son, and then his wife Ultima Morgan, which is a dope ass name.
What? Ultima?
That's
her
great.
Name's Ultima. Yeah.
Oh man.
Holy shit. That's badass. Wait, and who are the two brothers who are little people? That was one too, right? No one else saw that?
No, I missed that one.
Oh shit.
We're gonna have to take that conversation one. Offline. That needs to be delved into.
I'll
There's Winters and Yonkers. Winters and Yonkers,
that's another good one.
And Culpepper Curland.
Culpepper Curland.
Bam.
They made like a really like a very emotional one where it was like a car crash, and then I think it was Curland pulls this like out of the wreckage, pulls like a stuffed animal.
Oh god.
And then like walks into a house and like gives it to this little girl, and like the parents are crying, and it's like this emotional music.
Jesus like, Christ.
They're really going for it.
Damn.
But that guy's voice surprised, because he's like, they're both like that superficially jacked that like
yeah
happens when you have money, and then
the money jacked.
Yeah, you like get really jacked, and then your teeth are all super white, and you have like the fake tan. But his voice is like really high pitched, just makes me really happy.
Yeah,
because it like doesn't suit him at all.
There's nothing you can do about the voice. No amount of money can give you a deep, manly voice.
No.
So yeah, we're significantly off the rails, and I tried to find this this identical twin dwarfs.
I don't think that's real.
Well, I found the Rice brothers. They're known for commercials and infomercials, but I don't think they were lawyers. So I'm not sure what I was thinking of there. But they were from Florida, so I've definitely seen that commercial. I was tripping out.
You guys haven't seen the best... Well, maybe you have. There's the 1-877 Cars for Kids. Have you seen that one?
No.
That's like Northeastern, like New York. And when I was in Boston, they had it there. And it's like these kids playing in like a... It's like a band setup. So it's like four kids playing a guitar, bass, singing, and then there's like drums. And they just keep saying, 1-877 Cars for Kids. 1-877 Cars for Kids. But they never like explain what it is or what. It's like a charity, but I don't understand how, like, I guess you give them cars and they give them the kids. I don't. It's really strange, and it's
you swap your car for a kid. It's a like terrible never, trade.
They don't say anything. They sing the song, and then that's it. And then they like just commercials off.
Wow. Well, we'll have to find it.
I just have I have an affinity for local ads. I think they're really good.
No, it's wonderful. I'm trying really hard to see how we can tie it back into the movie. There's kids in this movie.
Yeah, Miguel's a kid.
Miguel's a kid. No one drives a car though, but that's fine.
Also, observation. I don't know if this is, I guess, because it's a kids movie, but there were no like dead kid skeletons. I guess they just didn't want to do that.
Mm. Not that I noticed. Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. And I guess it they played off the idea that you are a skeleton and you kind of look the way you did when you die.
Yeah.
Which is what always something I find interesting in movies, how they want to play that card.
Mm-hmm. That's the
I don't know how people.
I'm gonna do this for you right now. You ready?
Uh-oh.
That's the special editions retcon Anakin Skywalker Force Ghost situation.
Yeah.
So you got
there you go.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, old man, dies. Force Ghost is old. Yoda, you can't really tell because he's been old for forever. But then you go back to the idea that Anakin Skywalker died when he became Darth Vader. So if that's your whole steez, that's what you go for. So when he comes back as a Force Ghost, which, you know, begs the question, how did he learn how to do that? But whatever. He comes back as fucking Hayden Christensen? Are you kidding me? Get out of here.
Bullshit.
But yeah,
I would say he became Anakin again when he saved his son.
Right. You know? So he should be the old dude that has like half his face missing. But
yeah, the Eggman.
fucking Robotnik ass Darth Vader looking guy.
And very nicely done sneaking in your Star Wars prequels talk.
Always gonna get it in there.
Into this pot. I didn't think you'd be able to do it, but yeah,
Geekstrom, baby.
We are so far off, but it's okay.
Well, we got a talent show, and then they technically wins, right? They technically win.
Yeah, they kind of leave that up to the audience, but yeah, in my heart, they win. But we don't get to find out because, yeah, his family sneaks up and finds him through the help of Mama Rivera's badass Alebrije, that
so cool
griffin thing.
Yeah, what is that a thing? It's just like a griffin, isn't it? It's like.
It's like a panther with wings.
Yeah, it's like some kind of jaguar with wings.
Jaguar makes sense.
And it's like bigger than all the other ones. It's like enormous.
Yeah, they don't really explain how, I guess, you get your Alebrije and why they take the forms they do, but I guess it kind of makes sense because she's like, you know, a badass.
Mm-hmm.
So her Alebrije's got to be tough too.
Yeah.
And that's how they find Miguel. He sniffs him out, chase him out of the talent show, so we don't know if he wins or not. And then Hector and Miguel kind of have a little falling out. I can't really remember even why, but that's not the point. The point is that they split up.
Oh, and Miguel, it's because Hector, because he told Hector that he didn't have any family except for Ernesto de la Cruz.
Ah.
And Hector's like, you're a liar. And he's like, so are you. And then,
which is a fair point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're both liars.
Yeah.
Which is nice because then they're kind of both in the same amount of wrong. So as the audience, they do a really good job of not making you hate the Hector character.
Mm-hmm.
They could have definitely gone that route, but they handle it very well so that he's still sympathetic throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Even though he's portrayed as kind of like a grifter. But
well, if anything, it kind of paints Miguel in like it very very much teeters on this idea that Miguel is kind of in the wrong for the majority of it, which kind of goes back to that idea that whoever made this movie must have been slighted in some way, because really if there's a person, and I know this is kind of something that happens in general with the protagonist, especially someone that's like on a hero's journey, but there's a lot of times where you're just like, man, fucking calm down, Miguel. You don't need to be so, you don't gotta be so uppity all the time. Just, you know, people are just trying to do what's best for you. But I think it kind of plays into that whole rebellious kid thing where it's like, and it's funny, like, I wonder if I had seen this movie like 10 years ago, if I would have not even thought this even remotely at all. But now I'm getting to the point where like teenagers piss me off when I see them walking around just existing. So it's just like
their teenager stuff.
Yeah, so it's just like, man, this kid, he's just like I know that his family's like being weird about the music and everything, but they're just trying to send him home and keep him alive. You know, it's like chill, dude.
I mean, throughout the movie, most of the characters are being selfish in one way or another.
Yeah.
And not really taking into account the other members of their family, and that's kind of how we finally get to a resolution when mm-hmm. everyone starts to kind of understand each other.
Totally.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at this point, Miguel, kind of being a dick, breaks up from Hector and goes and gets himself into the party without him. So it's like, okay, that was pretty easy to do. We didn't have to go through all that anyway, but mm-hmm. whatever. He sneaks in, meets Ernesto, again, shoots a shot, plays a song in front of him, and gets his attention, and then reveals that he is his grandfather, great-grandfather, I guess. And everyone's happy and hunky-dory, so they go running around for, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Even though they're on a very time-sensitive mission.
It's a super funny montage they got going on
yeah,
there.
They're, like, playing polo.
Yeah.
I can't remember. They're, like, yeah.
They act out, like, a scene from a movie as the movie is going on, the two of them together.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, they're kind of planting the seeds that Ernesto is a very vain person.
Because
mm-hmm. at his annual party, they're just playing his own movie clips from when yeah. he was alive. And then Hector also crashes the party, sneaks in, pretending to be Frida Kahlo.
As one would.
As one would. I guess she's easy to pass for. And here's when we get the big twist.
Bum, bum.
This whole time, we thought Hector was just some dorky wannabe musician. Turns out he knows Ernesto, and they played music together.
What?
And then it turns out, on top of that, Hector was the one who wrote all the music. What? And then on top of that, we find out that Ernesto poisoned and killed Hector.
What?
Spoilers.
And then on top of that, he made a movie and played out that exact scene.
I know, I love that. What an asshole.
And then on top of that, what, Ethan?
That's it. That's everything that happens.
What? There's the biggest topper of all. What are you even talking about?
Just kidding. So, yeah, we get a lot of information dump on top of you right here. And Miguel realizes Hector's telling the truth and sides with him. So Ernesto takes that heel turn, throws them both into a pit of despair. And they're here, stuck in this pit, and they discover that Hector is actually Miguel's great-grandpa.
Boom, boom, boom.
Now, Cougie, did you see that twist coming?
Sort of.
It's a very okay. pregnant pause there. I love it.
I feel like once he got to the party and Ernesto turned out to be, like, not a great dude, I was like, there's no way he's going to be the great-grandpa now. Because
well, mm-hmm. yeah.
So
that was yeah. What do you think, Frankie?
Not necessarily Hector, but I saw it more as he was not the. So there's a scene where he's holding the pedal, you know, and mm-hmm. what I was expecting to happen is that he was gonna give his blessing or whatever, and then the pedal wasn't gonna glow, and then they're gonna be like, wait, what the hell? I thought you were related to me, and then all that. And then, you know, then it was going to be something. But then when it was Hector, I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, you have these people that are so similar, and it's just like one little thing, one little divergence. So it must, you know, if it wasn't one, it had to be the other. But the way that they handled it was kind of like a, oh, shit, yeah, that makes sense, instead of it being like, holy shit, I never saw that coming.
Yeah, I think that. Oh, yeah. What are you going to say, KG?
I was going to say, I really thought, yeah, like, I thought it was going to be, like, a fake out like that, too. I thought, well, I don't know why, I mean, this is besides the point, but I don't know why Hector didn't just try to give him a blessing and be like, I don't know, maybe this will work. The movie would have been, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's the only thing. Hector probably could have revealed more information earlier. And they may have been able to come to that conclusion. But throughout, he's kind of like, oh, yeah, I know Ernesto. We used to play music together. He sucks, blah, blah, blah. But I, for one, did not see this coming.
Well, especially with, you know, the kind of griftery personality that Hector has, where it's just like, a man, he doesn't really fucking know him. So yeah. Then when it's exactly. Oh shit, he's not lying at all. And it's just like, well, so that kind of gives you that all this shit he's saying must be true, but all that doesn't link up with everything that we've been told so far. So mm-hmm. they handled it so well, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, when they go through the whole thing of Miguel revealing or confronting Ernesto, telling him he's his great grandpa, I kind of just like accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting that they're going to have his great grandpa be this guy who walked out on his family. And it's like kind of conflicting emotions there. But
celebrity fixes everything, cool. Ethan.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, I guess we'll just brush past that. But no, it was a really, really smart reveal that Hector was his grandpa, and they handled it really well. And I was surprised. The friend I saw it with called me an idiot for not seeing it coming, but screw that guy.
Yeah, screw that
guy. I mean, they allude to it a little bit, because when he meets him, he's like, hey, you're my great-great-great-grandpa, and he's like, I have kids? And I was like, all right, maybe something weird here.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But yeah, when he meets Ernesto, yeah. And then, yeah, so on top of all that, it kind of comes together that this person that Hector this whole time is afraid is going to forget him is Coco, Miguel's great-grandma. And as you see in the beginning of the movie, she's, you know, very old and
yes.
You know, kind of losing it. So that all makes sense as well. And then we've realized that the picture this whole time that Miguel was looking at, it was a picture of, I guess it's his great-great-great-grandma who's the one who's looking for him.
Yeah.
And it's a picture of her child, which is Coco,
mm-hmm.
and a man whose head is ripped off
yep.
with the guitar, but it's Hector's guitar, and that's a picture yes. of Hector.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got it all together.
But even fucking Ernesto takes that guitar, which is why Miguel thought originally that, like, that's the guitar, so this must mm-hmm. be my great-great-great-grandpa or whatever. But it's like, no, not only did he fucking steal all his songs, he stole his goddamn guitar. It's like, just yeah. leave the man something. Jesus Christ.
And his outfit, too.
Yeah.
He stole everything.
One mass.
Yeah, his outfit. He poisoned him, and then he made a movie about it.
Yeah.
Ernesto's a real asshole.
Yes.
So, at this point, the great-great-great-grandma, Mama Rivera, shows up, finds them. Well, actually, Dante, the dog, finds him first.
Dante's the best.
Yeah. Underappreciate Dante. We haven't talked about him enough. They get out, but at this point, they still need the picture of Hector that Ernesto took
mm-hmm.
so that they could put it on the ofrenda.
Yep. Because
so again,
Ernesto didn't yeah. want Hector, or didn't want anyone to that had the ability to say that he was all bullshit to ever be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they went in the pit of despair and the photo was taken.
Yeah. And again, that's good because then it gives them a reason to stick around and mm-hmm. get revenge on Ernesto. Which they do. They confront him and they fight him at his big sunrise party he has every year for the end of the day. So you're coupling the timeline, the ticking bomb you have there at the sunrise, and everything's coming together. It's crazy. And they confront him, they fight him, and then they finally win over on him with a classic that we know from Monsters, Inc. Could you remember? By getting the bad guy to reveal his entire plot on camera.
Classic
trope. Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense in this movie, probably more so than it does in Monsters, Inc., because the bad guy character is the vain guy looking for the attention.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of works a little bit better within this plot in that he's hoisted on his own petard. That he has this, like, really, you know, vain show every year that's all about him.
Yeah.
And it's in that show that's what becomes his downfall. and they end up kind of killing him again, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of
the big jaguar knocks him off, and another bell falls on him, which is great. But I don't know quite if he's supposed to be dead there again or just in pain. But they kind of leave that.
Maybe he's just trapped under the bell for in perpetuity.
That's true. Now that everyone hates him, no one's going to help him get the bell off.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's actually a way more way more gnarly ending. And then we finally get the resolution. We get Miguel back to the land of the living. He doesn't have the picture of Hector because in the fray, it's lost in the river.
Mm-hmm.
But he now knows that Coco's the last living person to remember Hector. So he races to her, plays her the song Remember Me, that was the lullaby Hector wrote for her when she was a baby. And this is when the waterworks really kicked in.
That's the fucking killer. Yeah. That's so tough.
Yeah, this whole last like 5 minutes. He gets in the room, he plays her the song. The whole family's like, what are you doing playing music? They still don't know. And like they're trying to get away from him. And then Coco kind of comes to life and remembers everybody. She's talking to, I guess, the grandma, her daughter,
mm-hmm.
asking her why she's so sad, and then reveals that she still has a picture of Hector and all the notes that she wrote, that he wrote to her, that is solidifying his legacy and ruining mm-hmm. Ernesto's. So everything gets wrapped up so nice and tight in those last 5 tear-filled minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's so satisfying.
Oh, yeah.
What a great ending.
You almost don't remember that he essentially murdered that dog. He like brought him to the dead and was like, gotta go. Sorry, Dante.
Well, you gotta remember, Dante was at Alabrije the entire time. So he can go back and forth between...
Oh, is that what they are? So they can be a dog in real life, but a
yeah. Because remember the great 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 grandmother's jaguar pops over into the real world, and then it's just like a regular cat.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
So there you go. So the whole time the dog
lives. You go to that website. Does the dog die? The dog does not die in Coco.
A little Sixth Sense ending there. The dog was dead the entire time. What a twist.
Shyamalanian.
So yeah, that's really the plot, and yeah, what a great fucking movie.
Yeah, it's just fantastic.
I was very happy.
Yes.
Yeah, it all wraps up really neat bow. That's why I don't think we need a visit from the script doctor.
Nah,
he's got nothing to say.
They handled it well. So I got a question for you, like a this world question for you guys.
Sure.
So they have like the Marigold Bridge that goes across to the Land of the Dead. It's kind of like from that, you know, that town's cemetery. So does that mean that the land that they went to is connected by a bunch of bridges from a bunch of different cemeteries, or is it like like area specific or something? So there's like different lands of the deads that has, you know, specific people and families and everything that live in it. And so if you were to go south 200 miles, you would find another land of the dead. Or is it all just one big thing with a bunch of Marigold Bridges attached to it?
Well, they almost play it as if it could have been just that city specific.
Yeah.
They never say what area that is, right?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think they give it a name. But
they don't really give you like any census base in there. It's just like but they had different like terminals that you could see.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they had like a whole train station that you go through.
Yeah, so maybe you can go to different lands.
Yeah, that must be the case. Because I was gonna say all the dead characters we meet are from that mm-hmm. city, except for Frida Kahlo.
Yeah. Unless maybe that's our hint. Maybe that's the hint as to where it's supposed to be. Because they don't really, there's not really like a time frame for this either. Like it's kind of timeless. It's not really anything specific that will tell you how modern it is, right? Because no one has like cell phones or anything in this movie, right?
No cell phones, no. Probably the most modern thing I can think of is one of his brothers or relatives, Miguel's, is wearing like a Mexico jersey.
True, that's true.
But it doesn't really even look that.
And isn't there like a punk rock band in the Land of the Dead that plays songs? Like they had like...
Yeah.
Like I think they had like Mohawks and stuff. So I think they had electric guitars at the very least. So.
And there was like an original like like Apple One in like the...
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like
there's original what?
Like a computer. Like
the original.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So like so probably okay. at the latest like the '70s, like mid '70s.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
Interesting.
Frida Kahlo died in 1954. It has to be after that. That's the only really famous person we could relate here.
Ooh, did you catch the planet or the
planet the pizza truck. Pizza planet. Yeah, pizza the yo planet. Truck. I did catch it.
It was in there?
Briefly, in the beginning.
It was like in the alleyway that drove by really quick when Grandma was running out to beat people.
It drove by playing music, I think.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
And the grandma was like, turn that shit off.
Nice.
Just threw her shoe at it. And then did you also catch the Woody and Buzz Lightyear pinatas?
No. Damn it! No.
Very, very brief in the beginning, as he's running through the town.
I'm sure they're on the internet somewhere. I'm gonna have to go look that up.
Yeah. Or go see the movie again. I would see this movie again.
Yeah, I definitely would too.
Where do you guys recency bias aside? Would you put this in the upper echelon of Pixar movies?
Do you? Have I would.
Of top five.
I think. You know, it's obviously gorgeous. And the story is very tight, and you know it's a little tropey for sure, but it handles everything with kind of a freshness, and it, you know that it might be that it's you know culturally relevant to a different culture from the majority of almost all movies in general, and yeah, but I think all of that notwithstanding. It's still just a really enjoyable movie. And I mean, there's a lot of reasons, like we were talking about with it, integrating Spanish culture without bopping you over the head with it. Like, you know, there's really not any aspect of appropriation in this movie at all. It's just kind of all really reverential to the culture. And I think that having something like that where you can kind of look at it as like kind of a representation of ideas as well as being like a movie that has a succinct, well done story kind of gives it like another level that I think at least kind of combats that recency bias that you're talking about. Like, I think I'll be able to watch this in a couple years, like on whatever the fuck they end up calling the Disney streaming service and being like, yeah, hey, this movie holds up really well. So yeah.
What about you, Kiji?
Yeah, I'd say it's up there.
It's
different than like, I don't know. I feel like it's weird because it's not often that Pixar movies are about humans.
Yeah.
So it's hard to like place it in any sort of ranking above other ones, but it's definitely great.
Yeah, we haven't seen Inside Out yet, which may be probably the other more human of the movies.
Yeah.
That's coming up next, I believe.
That would be the next feature, yeah. If we want to go back to that. I would say it's probably the most visually striking Pixar movie since WALL-E.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the ones I've seen. I haven't seen The Good Dinosaur. I know that's supposed to be really well animated, if not, you know, a good movie at all. But, yeah, it may be the most visually striking of the Pixar movies I've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely, I think, sits up there with the best. And as we were leaving, I watched it with a friend of mine and my wife. And not to get into it too much, but she was like, this was a really important movie. And then she was like, when can we impeach Trump? And I was like, oh, sweet wife.
Sweet someday.
Wife. Was there some subliminal messaging in there about that?
Well, you know, he's not really the biggest fan of Mexicans, and I don't think Mexicans are the biggest fan of him.
No, he isn't.
So it's hard not to to consider him.
Yeah. It's kind of you wonder how far back, you know, when this got kind of slated for the production schedule, and it just is interesting that it comes at a time, you know, that where there's like racial divisions in our country. Like, I mean, there's always been, but, you know, specifically with Mexican culture right now. And, you know, for a movie to come out that is so, like, unapologetically Mexican and just shows the, you know, immense cultural relevance and how beautiful and family-oriented and wonderful those people are, you know, without, like, being like, hey, remember, Mexicans are good. These are good Mexicans. So it's just like, no, this is a story about Mexican people, and they're just like us. They just have, you know, a little bit different way of handling, you know, like family matters and stuff like that. But, you know, everyone just loves everyone and wants to do the best they can. So, yeah, it's I think saying that it's important is not like trying to be like a social justice warrior or anything like that. It's like, it's an accurate statement for sure.
Yeah. And the idea was originally pitched apparently in 2010. So mm-hmm. They've been working on it for a while. And, you know, it is a little unfortunate to even have that thought and not just appreciating this as a, you know, beautiful movie in its own right.
Yeah.
But of course it's really impossible not to.
Yeah.
But yeah, what a goddamn movie. any parting thoughts? Stray observations? Kind words?
The animation of the people playing the instruments was out of this fucking world.
Oh, yeah, they like accurately hitting the right strums and such?
Yeah, they did. They would attach like GoPros to like the bridges of the guitars while people were playing the music, so that they could mimic the, you know, hand positions and the plucking and everything, like, you know, like stroke for stroke. And it's really there, like, especially in that early scene when he's in his like little music cave above the house and he's playing on that homemade guitar. Like, the like chord phrasing and stuff that he's using is just, it's beautiful to see. You know, it's like they need to like license out that technology so that people can learn how to play guitar by watching hands and from fucking Coco, because it's awesome. It's super cool.
And that's great, because a lot of like movies with real people don't even go so far as to like try to look like
an
instrument.
Yeah.
All the time it's like terrible hand acting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that I always hate that, because it's very easy to notice that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Looking at you, Back to the Future.
Hey. Kuji, any other parting thoughts here? Or do you think we wrap it up?
Go see The Cobbler on Netflix. Do a shout out to that.
There you go.
A great pairing.
If you love Coco, watch The Cobbler.
Well, great. I think we'll end it on that. Thanks for joining us, Frankie.
Yeah, thanks for having
Being
me.
The authority.
Thanks, bro.
Oh, yeah, thanks for coming too, Kuji.
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Next time, I guess we'll go back to actual shorts. We'll figure that out. Follow the Asterix R Twitter account for updates. That's the way you get it. And check out the Geekstrom podcast that Frankie hosts.
Oh, thanks, man.
Talking about all things geek.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a long journey here. A nice, lovely journey, so
yes,
we can be friends again.
Well, then I will plug the fact that you two were on the, was it the Stranger Things one?
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so that was the first cross-pollination.
Yeah.
Well, from my amigos to yours, I'll say adios.
Bye.
Cuídate.
Mozzarella!